What's up, everybody? I'm back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got very special guest and good friend, NFL kicker Spencer Schrader. We filmed a bunch of different things on the side as well, and Spencer broke a little bit of news. So be sure to be tuned in and smash that subscribe button. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, this is not financial advice. Everything you hear in this podcast should not be taken as financial advice. And are you looking for the number one way for you to store your Bitcoin on a punch plate where you cannot lose that seed phrase? As long as that your seed phrase is on that punch plate and you keep it secure, that thing is not going anywhere. The number one place you can do that is Stampseed. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE, get 15% off your entire order. And to prep for every single episode, I use BitcoinNews.com. They've got the number one newsletter in the Bitcoin space, so go ahead and check them out. And lastly, I just dropped some merch, so go ahead and check it out. I got some cool hats, shirts, sweaters, and hoodies, so go ahead and check that out. Link is in the bio. All right, enough for me. Let's get into the show. Whoosh.
Wow. Like a little clap. Yeah, I mean, that's how I start every show. So, yeah. Yeah. I want to get a little shirt too that's like a peek behind the curtain, but a little like it says Bing Bong, but the bees are like the Bitcoin bees.
Yeah.
I want to do that.
I like that.
Just give a
little clap. Yeah. We're good? Yeah. All right. All right. We are live here in sunny Tampa, Florida, with the new Indianapolis Colts kicker, Spencer Schrader. Spence, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm super happy to be here.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I'm super excited to talk about this because obviously congratulations with everything that's gone on, right? Very stressful time about the NFL draft, but also a very interesting time in sports because, you know, last bull run, we saw OBJ, Saquon, like a lot of the big names take a percentage of their you know, whether it's salary or signing bonus, or I think Saquon took all of his endorsement deals in Bitcoin. But a lot more people, like UFC fighters, are now talking about it. A lot more people are talking about Bitcoin. So I'll start off the bat, man. How are you looking at Bitcoin as potentially a newly signed NFL kicker?
Well, I can tell you this right now. I'm taking my entire signing bonus in Bitcoin.
There we go.
I'm not talking about a ton of money, right? I'm a free agent, so it's a little bit different than getting drafted, but it's definitely something. And if I can do any part to kind of spread that word and get awareness towards Bitcoin, I'm going to do it. So I'm pretty excited about it. That's going to be the first move for me.
Yeah, man, that's awesome stuff. So you went to USF, right? Mm-hmm. And then you transferred to Notre Dame. But you were in college in a very different athletic experience than I was, I would say. I mean, I'm going to sound old saying this, but there was no NIL when I was an athlete.
It's changing very rapidly.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that, man. Like, was there like, I mean, I guess I can revert it back to a little bit of my college experience. Like when I was in, you know, when I was back in my day, when I was in college in 2012, 2016, the only time we really talked about money was maybe like seniors who are about to graduate. Most of the time we were just talking about, all right, we're going to finish this track meet, go figure out where we're going to go get drunk next and just go from there, man.
Right.
But I imagine like there's a little bit more talk about business, money, that kind of aspect of it in the NFL college locker room. Am I right on that or no?
I would say so. Most definitely. It's definitely something that you got to be prepared for now going into college. And it still does, you know, change depending on the sport. So you have football and basketball that are going to be your biggest earners. And so those guys really got to have some sort of plan of what they're going to do when they get to college and they have all this NIL. And so it was something that we talked about in the locker room quite a bit from my experience, both at USF when we really didn't have much NIL at all. And then at Notre Dame, when I would say we were on the higher end of the NIL spectrum.
Yeah. Okay. So then like, what were those conversations like? Were they more like, hey, you know, you're going to make this much if you come here and if you play, whatever bonuses or whatever it is? Or is it more like, hey, you know, like the reality of the situation is a lot of you guys, like maybe 1% of you is going to go to the league. You guys have a golden ticket here where you're playing at a big major university. You're able to, you know, make a lot of money for an 18, 19, 20 year old kid. So spend it wisely. Like what was kind of the, I guess, like the framing of that conversation?
Well, it's definitely becoming much more business-like, like you're working the job. And so I was blessed to kind of experience the whole variety of NIL because my first couple of years at USF we had nothing. There was no NIL legislation that was passed at all. My junior year, there was a law passed that you could now make money off of your name, image, and likeness, meaning that you were free to have a business. You were free to sell merchandise. You were free to do advertisements, whatever kind of circled around you making money off your name, image, and likeness, you were free to do. So that was cool because then you could go pursue deals as an athlete. But again, you're only talking about those top guys that are in the spotlight that are able to actually do that. Unless you're kind of outside of the box thinking, maybe you got a unique name, maybe you got something different about your personality that makes you able to capitalize on a deal, you were free to go out and make money off that. So now I would categorize NIL almost into two different buckets. One bucket is going to be what I just mentioned, you going out and making deals, you agreeing to terms with a business owner or a franchise of some sort to get NIL. And then the other one is the collective that a university sets up to pay their athletes in order to come there. And there's some yellow paper on that. It's still illegal for programs to pay athletes to come and play. So usually it's done through a third party that's associated with the university, but is not the university paying those athletes, because it still is illegal for a football program to pay their athletes to come and play there.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, I mean, that's always been intriguing to me because it's been illegal, right? But everybody has kind of known that. I mean, like Arian Foster, he has a podcast on Barstool and he talks about it all the time that he was paid under the table at Tennessee. I mean, it's been going on for, you know, a long period of time. SMU had the death penalty because they were paying a bunch of people. So, I mean, the money behind college athletics has been huge, right? And like college athletes are just now kind of being able to, I guess in a sense, capitalize off their name, capitalize off of, you know, 80,000 plus in the stadiums, right, in South Bend and those snowy days that I'm sure you had out there kicking and whatnot. But like, what kind of resources did they give to you? And, you know, did it differ from any sort of, I guess, like traditional, I guess, like business kind of classes or education in that sense where they were, you know, maybe teaching you a little bit about more of like money investing, that kind of thing, or is it still kind of lacking?
So that's a really good question. And I think that this is the positive effects of NIL are going to come out here, because a lot of people like to talk about the negatives. Oh, you got these 18-year-olds making all this money. Well, how are they equipped to handle that? You know, how do they know how to spend their money, how to invest it? Well, schools are incentivized to give them the resources that they need to capitalize on that money. If you're a program like Notre Dame, you want your athletes coming in and being incredibly responsible with the money that you're getting. So you're setting up investment classes for them. You're bringing in, you know, guest speakers, businessmen, former athletes that have gone on to the NFL that have had to learn how to handle their money. And you're exposing them to the resources that they need to be smart with their finances. And then schools are incentivized to do that. So you have one school starts doing that, well, then all the others start to as well. So that's the business aspect of it that just happens when you have a free market, is these schools are now doing things to help their athletes manage that money effectively and put it towards good uses.
Now, was there any talk about, you know, obviously we had 2020, right? Inflation was just absolutely crazy. Was there any talk about that, the massive amounts of money printing, like what potentially could happen, what potentially could come out of that? Or was it kind of lacking at that time?
I would say, unfortunately, in general, most of the financial literature out there is not coming from an Austrian perspective. It's not coming from a principled economic standard. I was very blessed to study Austrian economics from a very young age. So I knew how to cope with inflation. I knew what I wanted to invest in, how the government was manipulating my money and what to do to protect against that. That's still not something that's talked about super heavily. I would say it tracks just the general knowledge out there. So you go to these classes, it's not specialized on how inflation is affecting your savings and everything. I wish it was. It's just more standard protocol, standard financial knowledge.
Okay. So then bring us into how you found Bitcoin and kind of got into there. Was it something, I guess it sounds a little bit more around the, like the Austrian kind of aspect of it then. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And so my dad studied at Ball State University. He double majored in computer science and history and finished first in both his classes.
Oh, there we go.
Very smart individual. But he would always tell me that he didn't even begin to learn until he was graduated from college and he found Austrian economics. So he found the Mises Institute that was started by Lou Rockwell in memory of Ludwig von Mises, who was a pretty popular Austrian economist that came over and and wrote some really good books. Human Action, I think, is his most popular. And so for me, because my dad discovered it as soon as he had graduated college, I grew up with it. It was just standard in my house. I'm a kid and I'm reading like Austrian economics. All my friends are like, dude, this guy's weird. I'm like, I promise you, this is good stuff right here. So yeah, I would say I was very blessed in that regard. That was just part of my system. And then we officially found Bitcoin in 2014 when my family and I were living in Austin, Texas. And my dad had hired on an intern for his company who was running a Mises Institute startup at the University of Texas. He's like, man, this is the guy who's running the Mises Institute. He's obviously into Austrian economics. I want to hire him as part of my company.
Wow.
The only thing that this guy would talk about was Bitcoin.
Really?
That was it. So he's Bitstein. He's really popular on Twitter now.
Okay.
I'm sure that you've heard of him.
He's been
out to Tampa actually for some events. He was the one who introduced us to Bitcoin back in 2014.
Okay. Wow. That's crazy. So actually the first time I heard about Bitcoin was in Austin. It was from one of my buddies who went to UT. So this might be dating me, but I was a freshman in college in 2012. So in 2012, December 21st, the Mayan calendar said the world was going to end, but it just so happened to be one of my best friends from high school's birthday. And so we're like, all right, dude, if the world's going to end, why don't we just go get drunk with the boys at the frat house? You know, we'll go party it up. So we go there and I'm talking to him for a second and he's like, dude, we had some guy come in to us and talk to, I mean, at that time he was going to the business school at UT. He's like, we had some guy come in and talk to us about Bitcoin. And I really think it's going to be the future. I'm like, really? He's like, why? He's like, I don't know. There's just like a lot of cool stuff. I'm like, oh, awesome, man. It's like, yeah. And then we just forgot about it then.
Yeah.
I didn't hear about Bitcoin again for like years afterwards after that. But I saw him like fairly recently and he still hasn't bought Bitcoin. Oh. So I don't know like what is going on. He's like well behind me now. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know.
Well,
like,
we were kind of the same way. So,
yeah.
So, you know, this guy is like talking to us about Bitcoin all the time. And at this point, Bitcoin's maybe $150 a coin. And we're like, what is this guy going on about? Like, what is all this cryptocurrency, blockchain, all this stuff? So it took us a while to actually adopt Bitcoin and see its use case, not only as a finance, you know, for the world, but also just as a way to save, to hedge against inflation, and to ultimately make this world a better place.
I think
that's its biggest upside.
No, 100%.
So we didn't officially start buying into Bitcoin until probably 2017.
Okay.
It took us a little while to get.
Yeah, I feel like it always kind of takes everybody a little bit, right? I always talk about like the touch points, right? Because I think, you know, you have to be an absolute psychopath to like hear about Bitcoin the first time and just buy it, right? I mean, it's like, all right, you know, if somebody says buy Apple stock, obviously this is not financial advice or anything like that. But if somebody says buy an Apple stock, like I would say everybody in the US probably has heard of Apple, right? They know an iPhone, they know a MacBook. If somebody says buy an Apple stock, they could buy it from the first time somebody telling them to do it because they're like, hey, you know, I've seen this all the time. But if somebody had never heard of Bitcoin and then they're like, hey, buy this like magic internet money and they just go and do it, I would be shocked. Yeah. So, I mean, I'd be interested to hear like kind of like how the conversation is when you first kind of get into the locker room, you know, with the Colts and whatnot, like as this develops throughout your career, if you're going to be like the crazy Bitcoin guy or if there's actually like a wider population, because I had Vince Beagle on. He's now I think he's not on a team right now, but he was on the Ravens and he tore his Achilles last year. But he was telling me he would say about like 10% of an NFL locker room knew about Bitcoin, had some Bitcoin, and like was like interested in cryptocurrency, which I think is like astronomically higher than the overall percentage of the population. So I guess this is a long-winded question to get to. Like, why do you think that athletes are maybe more inclined to get into it? Is it because of like all the money? Is it maybe because of, you know, the people they have around them? Like what would you kind of equate to that?
Yeah, I think athletes in general sometimes tend to be kind of outside the box thinkers. I mean, just the pressures that you face, the environment that you have to navigate, it has a tendency to put a lot of self-responsibility on you. There's a lot of, I have to make decisions for myself. I have to be able to gauge these situations. And so sometimes there's this image portrayed of athletes as the only thing that they're good at is sports. And they're dumb in all other categories. And they can't do anything. It's a stereotype. Maybe sometimes it's true. But to my experience, a lot of these athletes that I was around were at least good hearted and good intentioned and wanted to figure out ways to manage their finances, even if they didn't know the specifics or hadn't been raised in a system that gave them all the tools to do that. So most of the people that I knew in college football at USF and at Notre Dame had heard about Bitcoin. Very few of them understood the fundamentals behind Bitcoin and why you wanted to buy it beyond just this stock type thing that goes up and down and I can make money off of it. So that was my job. That's where I came in. And I really tried not to be just the crazy Bitcoin guy that was always like, but explain the fundamentals of why you want to buy into this, what inflation does to your money, and why this can be a secure investment moving forward.
So, all right, I'll put you on the spot here. Then how many of those teammates do you think you convinced to the other side and now are like Bitcoin psychopaths?
No, a decent amount. And this is funny you bring this up because I just was at the Bucks Pro Day recently. A lot of guys from South Florida went to the Bucks Pro Day because you're able to go to Pro Days that are in your vicinity. And I met up with them and they were like, dude, Spencer, like, I remember when you were telling us about Bitcoin back when it was like 15 grand and now it's 60. And they're like, I wish I bought in like when you told me about it. And my whole message was like, guys, there's still time. Like, don't feel like you lost out. Like, there's still time. It's still at a low dollar cost average. Just buy and save. And so I think that was an awakening for that specific group of guys that, hey, I mean, you know, Spence was onto something in this particular situation. Yeah. Maybe I'll kind of dollar cost average. I'll get into it a little bit. It's everyone has that awakening.
No, I mean, I think it's funny you say that, though, because I think it's the number go up. Right. I mean, I like as much as like Bitcoiners kind of, you know, want to say one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. I think like for the American perspective or the West perspective where we have the dollar. Right. I mean, we don't really have to think about inflation too much. I mean, obviously, Bitcoiners are crazy. We think about it all the time, right? I mean, we see it. And 2020 was a unique period where, and 2008, right, where we've seen inflation run rampant two times pretty significantly in our lifetime, where, you know, a lot of people don't really experience that. And so I think, like, from the average person, they have the whole coiner bias where they think, like, oh, you know, I want to buy a full Bitcoin and it's at 60 grand now. And I don't, you know, I'm not going to be able to just dump in, or they're just like trying to time it like a stock where they think like, oh, you know, it's going to dip at certain point. Cause I have a bunch of friends that say the same thing. They're like, oh, I wanted to buy it and it was at 35 and I wanted it to go down to 30 and I didn't buy it yet. And then I lost my chance. And I'm like, guys, just fucking just buy in, just DCA, man. Like, why is it
the short-sighted thinking of like, how can I make a profit quickly? When I think, as with anything, it's a long game. And you would expect athletes to understand that, because the first time you step foot on the football field, you're not going to be the best version of yourself.
Yeah,
that is a multiple year-long journey to get to the point where you can maximize that and start earning revenue. Well, Bitcoin's the same way. Like, why do we think that we can step into any category in life and just immediately start making money? There's always time and resources devoted to something before it pays off. Yeah. And I think if you make those examples to them, then they can kind of understand it in simpler terms. Like, oh no, he's right. Like, it takes time and energy on the football field over years and years for me to eventually maximize that product and make money. Same thing with Bitcoin.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting you bring that up too, because like NFL, right, they jokingly say it stands for not for long. The average career is less than 4 years. And you got to think, like, right, you spend your basically, you know, since you're 6, 7, 8 years old, training all this time to basically maximize the amount of like 3 or 4 years, you know, on average, right? I mean, not everybody's going to be a Tom Brady that's in the league for 15 years plus and whatnot. I mean, like, best case scenario, a lot of these people are in like for 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this a little bit pre-show. You got to try to stretch that money out and make that money that you made in that 10 years last your entire lifetime, which can be kind of a daunting task, because, you know, a lot of people, they'll go out, they'll buy their Rolexes, they'll buy the chains, they'll buy the cars, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I guess you already kind of talked about taking your signing bonus in Bitcoin. Like, what other measures are you going to try to take in order to, I guess, like, kind of avoid, you know, being, what was it, the statistic of, you know, a lot of athletes potentially going broke, like, shortly thereafter their career. Like, is there anything outside of Bitcoin that you're looking at to kind of, I guess, protect your wealth?
Oh, no doubt. So I'm a big entrepreneur. I like to look at value in all sorts of situations. And so I was always intrigued with real estate from a pretty young age. So when I was at South Florida, I really started to make some strides into saving and investing for the future. So I went into USF in 2019 as a true walk-on. I wasn't recruited at all. I had just gotten back from spending a year overseas playing soccer. So it was like this crazy new transition. I was lucky to have an academic scholarship, so I didn't have to pay anything to go to USF. I lived at home, so I would save on rent, and I would work at the sports complex with my sister. We have a private training company.
Yeah.
So this money that I was making from my job, I would literally just put into index funds.
Just
savings. And I didn't have any rent. Football took care of all of my food, and I was on an academic scholarship, so I didn't have to pay for school. So I'm just saving up all this money, and then I'm starting to look at other ways to invest it, because right now it's just sitting in these index funds, which is great.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is still baseline number one of my investment strategy. But I'm looking to diversify. So a year later in 2020, I buy my first house.
Oh, wow. Congrats. Yeah, I'm sure that's worked out pretty well.
At the time, it was a risky investment, you know, because you don't know. You're now, in hindsight, you know, it's 2020. But at the time, there was a lot of risk involved. But I was willing to take that step. I bought the house. I lived there for maybe 3 months. And then I moved back home and kept working, because I'm like, man, I'm still like, I'm just looking to maximize these pockets of time. Mm. So at that point, I rented my house out to all my football buddies. So I was making a profit off the house, and I was still making money from my job that I was putting in index funds. So I had two passive income sources at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that throughout my entire college career. In fact, it got pretty extreme, because during COVID, all of our classes went online. And I just told my academic advisors, I'm like, can I just keep them online?
Yeah.
Like, I grew up homeschooled, so I was used to working at my own pace, handling my business. I'm like, I would rather just keep my classes online, so that I have more time to work in the afternoons. So then what ended up happening is I would wake up every morning, like 5:30 a.m. I would drive to USF. I'd knock out all of my football stuff in the morning, and I would drive right back home. And I would just work at the sports complex, doing private trainings. I'd make money. I'd put in index funds. I bought that real estate investment. I bought a Tesla so that I wasn't paying any money in gas. And I was just saving money whole time.
My man Spencer the dog over here, dude. You're grinding.
When you're brought up with an Austrian mindset on how to save money, on how to prepare for the future, it's literally like a superpower. It just gives you an advantage. So then when I went, my junior year, I did get put on athletic scholarship. So at that point, I was making money through a COA, cost of attendance checks. Basically, they give you money it's more money than what it would actually cost to live, but they just call it like cost of attendance.
COA. Yeah.
So at that point, I was taking my cost of attendance checks and I was putting that in savings.
Yeah.
So I was literally making money from USF, because I was on athletic scholarship. I was making money from the index funds, and I was making money from real estate, and I was making money from the private training job. And I had, again, very, very low living expenses.
Yeah.
I was driving a Tesla. I was living at home. I had all of my food taken care of through football, which was a big blessing.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any school costs.
Shit.
So awesome. It's not like I was making a ton of money from my ventures, but it's just that I was basically spending nothing. So then over time, it's that snowball effect. It just keeps
creeping,
it keeps going.
No, 100%. Yeah.
And then when I transferred to Notre Dame, at that point, I started actually making more NIL money because of the state of college athletics.
Mm-hmm.
There was just more money to be made at that time, especially going to Notre Dame. So then I bought my second real estate investment up in South Bend. Instead of just renting a place and throwing that money away, I wanted to invest for the future. So I bought a second house up in South Bend that I am getting ready to Airbnb out.
Oh, nice, man. Yep. That's awesome. Well, and congratulations.
Thank you. And I've sprinkled in some material purchases, because we've strictly been talking from a financial perspective, but there's also the purpose and fulfillment perspective.
Yeah.
And, you know, I am very careful with my money, but I also enjoy life that I've been given. I mean, it's so cool that we get to experience all of these amazing things.
Yeah.
And so there's things that I want to accomplish as a person, like having a nice car and like doing some of these more materialistic things, that so long as I'm able to keep it in perspective, I'm able to kind of let myself go after some of that
stuff. All right, cool. You set me up for my next question, because I was going to ask, all right, like you seem like you're pretty frugal, right? You're working your magic to kind of scrap and get by and make as much as you can in college, which is, you know, commendable to say the very least. But soon, like hopefully everything goes well, right? You make the Colts, you get that first check. Do you have a big purchase planned in there or what?
I don't think so, really.
Really?
I put it into the business. So I was very blessed. I got to accomplish one of my lifelong dreams when I got to Notre Dame, and that was getting a Corvette. Through an NIL deal. And that, I would say, was the biggest thing that I dreamed of from a materialistic perspective. My grandpa worked for GM. He had Corvettes when I was a kid. Ever since I was 5 years old, I'd always wanted one.
Yeah.
And that was like my big thing because I'm a car guy.
Yeah.
Notre Dame made that happen. It was a crazy long story, but that ended up happening. And I was like, man, I just accomplished like a lifelong dream. And I specifically remember, I think it was 3 days after I'd bought it, and I went out to the garage and I'm like looking at this thing. And I'm like, what? This is just a car, right? It's just an object. Like, why does this mean so much to me? And I realized it kind of clicked for me in that instance that it wasn't the car that brought me any value. It was the manifestation of a dream.
Yeah.
It was like 20 years of hard work and discipline and sacrifice that made that a possibility. And that's the way that I wished that people looked at the materialistic stuff, like the big houses and the big cars. There's nothing wrong with that stuff in of itself if you look at it like it's purposeful.
Yeah.
Like you're doing it for a purpose. You're accomplishing something that you set after. When you're just willy-nilly purchasing things and you're just doing it for the flash, for the social media image, to show and flex that you got money, that's when I think you have an issue.
Yeah.
But if you're able to keep those things in perspective and enjoy the manifestations of your labor, then yeah, go out, get a nice car, get a nice house, you know?
No, I mean, I agree with that too, because I think, you know, we run into, I don't know. I mean, I do it right all the time right now, right? Where I run into like, shit, man, I'm not purchasing enough Bitcoin. I'm not, you know, saving enough. But you know, I'm going on like traveling to a bunch of these conferences, I'm interacting with a lot of people, and I'm just like, I keep having to tell myself, all right, I'll come back around, right? But I'm enjoying what I'm doing now. So, you know, that's, yeah, I guess like money, happiness has a cost, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, I mean, maybe like money doesn't necessarily buy happiness, right? But it's a lot of things, like, you know, it buys freedom, it buys a lot of, you know, aspects of things that people don't like to equate with money. But I think, you know, the more I think about Bitcoin, and the more I think about, you know, that kind of, I don't know, the journey that it's taken me on, it's like, well, money affects so many different things of our lives, right? I mean, we have the Florida Beef Initiative down here. We have a lot of things, you know, that are kind of, I guess, Bitcoin adjacent is how I like to describe it, right? People talk about being self-sovereign. At the end of the day, I think just being able to earn money or, you know, save in Bitcoin allows you to have your own personal freedom, which brings, I don't know, it's going to bring me happiness. And I can tell that from the future, just 1,000%. From that. So, and I think like a lot of people, like, I mean, you know, you get the 9-to-5 grind and people think like that's how you're going to bring happiness, is just working harder for somebody else to make money off you. And I don't know, for me, I just don't see a way that I could be personally fulfilled doing that.
You know? Have to find something that brings you purpose.
Yeah.
Like there is no point to making money if it isn't for a purpose. And that's why you see consistently that some of the wealthiest, some of the richest, some of the people that have the most from an outside perspective are actually the most broken and desolate on the inside.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what they're working for. There's no fulfillment in it. And if that becomes the dream in itself, it's scary, but it doesn't bring you much. And that's kind of the realization when I was looking at that car, is like 20 years and it happened. And I had this like weird epiphany of like, well, it wasn't the car at all. It was the dream itself. And so for me, that's why Bitcoin is so awesome, is that, yeah, I invest in Bitcoin. I really have no plans on selling it and cashing out and making a profit, because it's all about what you talked about. It's supporting the Beef Initiative. It's bringing people together. It's how can Bitcoin make this world a better place? That's why I want to invest in it. That's why I want to draw attention to it.
Yeah.
So people have to look at the purpose and the fulfillment and what drives them as an individual, as opposed to just money in of itself.
I gotcha. Yeah. I mean, that's great. That's super powerful. So like with that, right? I mean, obviously NFL, it's a lot of bright lights, a big stage, right? I mean, a lot of people haven't heard of Bitcoin, but we do have a few other NFL players kind of speaking out about it. I think it's DeMario Davis of the Saints. Sorry if I botched his name. Another guy who just kind of recently came out, obviously Saquon Barkley is a big one. OBJ.
Russell Okung.
Yeah.
He was one of the founders.
Yeah. He was one of the big ones. He was the first that kind of like tweeted out, pay me in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And now he's like all into fasting and everything like that. I think, I don't know if you've seen his transformation, but he went from like a NFL lineman, 300 plus pounds, to I think he's like 180 now. Just crazy. Like, yeah, it's insane. Crazy. But yeah, so how do you, I guess, like, anticipate, outside of just taking your signing bonuses in Bitcoin, how do you, I guess, plan on using your platform, using the NFL, like that kind of audience, the bright lights and what have you, to kind of, I guess, help spread the word about Bitcoin?
So my purpose will always be as a Christian, first and foremost.
Yeah.
And that's just because it goes along with the things that I talked about, where I'm obsessed with this idea of making the world a better place. Because I can't imagine that at the end of the day, like, I get somewhere and it's like, oh my gosh, like, all of that was in vain. All of the riches that I amassed, all of the properties I had, all the cars that I had, all the fame that I had on an NFL standpoint was literally nothing, like dust to dust. The only thing that is going to bring me, like, true satisfaction and happiness is if I genuinely make this world better. Now, I think I can absolutely do that through all of those other things. Right, through the NFL, through real estate investing, through saving in Bitcoin, through having properties. That's a vessel to accomplish my deeper purpose, which is leaving this world better. And to me, I think everyone has that inside them a little bit. So that's kind of why I think you see guys in the NFL come to that realization, is like, to those guys, that life that is oh so glamorous, that's just their life. It's just, it's pretty normal. Honestly, like, I don't really, I'm just the same me that I was at every stage.
Yeah.
You know, I just have, like, a little bit more stuff and a little bit more knowledge, but I'm still me. That's how those guys feel too. And so I think to them, it's like, oh man, like, I have all this stuff. Like, what am I going to do with it? Like, I do want to spread the message of Bitcoin. Like, yeah. I do want to get that out of there. And I think more people would do that if they just had the knowledge. Some people, they just don't have the knowledge yet, and that's okay. But it takes those guys to kind of start to get the gears turning a little bit and start to pepper in bits of information here and there. To slowly create that snowball effect of momentum of like, hey, we can do something more than just run around on a football field and cash checks. Like, yeah, there's something deeper behind it.
Snap necks, cash checks.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, there we go.
Exactly.
But all right. Well, we just had the draft, right? So you're signed with the Colts right now. So talk us a little bit about, like, the next upcoming few weeks. This podcast is going to come out a little bit later, after probably when you're in training camp or whatnot, or I don't even know when training camp starts. So maybe rookie mini camp or whatnot. So tell us a little bit about, like, what's ahead for you.
Yeah, well, it's all brand new. So the draft just happened a couple days ago. So I'll be headed up to Indy in about a week, which I think is going to, we'll go to rookie minicamp first. Then we'll go into, like, OTAs. And then from there, you transition into the preseason, and then you go into the regular season. And I think one thing that's important to note is that when you're in a position like me, I might only be with the Colts for a couple months, and then I might be on a different team. Because obviously my goal is to step in and win the job and do the very best that I can and be the Colts starting kicker next year. But if you're going as a free agent, that means that they also have a guy there as well. And that guy's traditionally, you know, league veteran on a multi-million dollar contract. He's the one that you're trying to beat out. So that's why it's so important for me that I just go in and I just do the best that I can every day.
Yeah.
That I have a great time, that I maximize that opportunity. And then I just trust that God has a plan for me that might extend beyond the Colts. So I might only be with them for 3 months, and then I might be in California. You don't really know. You know, it's a very transitory period of life. There are a lot of stressors and pressures involved, but it's also a blessing as well. But yes, the timeline for me right now is rookie minicamp, OTAs, preseason, and then hopefully the season somewhere.
We'll
see.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, we were talking about this a little bit at the Bitcoin halving party down here in Bitcoin Bay. You know, there's only 32 kickers, right? I mean, it's a very small amount of numbers, right? I mean, like, any other position in the NFL, there's multiple, except for maybe, like, long snapper and whatnot. There's, like, a few just very special like, positions where there's only one on each team really being held. So I guess, like, how are you kind of mentally preparing yourself for that as you're going forward?
Yeah, I think the important thing to keep in mind is that you have to understand what a gift and a privilege it is to even have this moment.
Yeah.
Like, if you're so obsessed with the idea of beating someone out and making a team and sticking in the league, I think that you lose the driving factor behind why you're doing it in the first place. Like, for me, I'm doing it for a couple of reasons. One, it's to give my faith a platform and to give the things that we're talking about in this podcast a platform. Two, it's to pursue the extent of my athletic abilities. And then three would be to create a living for myself, but that doesn't have to be through the league. There's many ways to do that. But it's just enjoying this moment and this gift that I've been given. And so that's my mentality going in, is always keep a positive perspective, enjoy the moment. There's going to be moments of stress. Like, when you're a competitor, there's days where I'm like, my, this is the worst day. Like, this is awful, but it's, hopefully you have the emotional maturity because of the things that you've done that have gotten to you to that point that you can revert back to why you're there in the first place.
Yeah. Hey man, I get it, dude. I remember some of those dog days of summer, just like training. You're just like, why the fuck am I doing this, dude? I don't want to go out and run like 16 miles. I mean, sure, as you just get kicking, but still like kicking, lifting weights, doing all this stuff. You're sore. Yeah. Your hips probably hurting you. You don't want to do it, but you just grind through, man.
Well, one really good quote that I've heard recently as I've been studying stoicism is there's pain either way.
Yeah.
And the pain that comes from action and doing something like running 16 miles or trying to make it to the NFL, it's right there and you see it, right? Yeah. It's a physical pain that's right there. It's the mental anguish of like failing, you know, it's the pain of getting cut, being told that you're not good enough. Like everyone feels that and it's obvious to see. But to me, the alternative is way worse.
Yeah.
Because it's like this slow, like degrading pain of like not accomplishing what you were created for, not going and achieving what God blessed you with the ability to go after. That to me is way worse. Like I couldn't imagine a life where I just kind of sat around and didn't pursue everything that I've been given. I think that pain is worse. You don't feel it immediately, but you certainly feel it over time. And I think it comes out in a lack of purpose.
Yeah. And it, like, I don't know, this kind of struck me too, because, you know, like you kind of said, right? I mean, there's pain either way, right? So I think that's how I kind of viewed it. I mean, like I was a mid-major athlete, right? So I knew I needed to work my ass off in order to stay on the team, keep my scholarship and kind of do that. You came on as a walk-on as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously you ended up at Notre Dame, which is an outstanding school, but there's a lot more pressure that comes with those bigger, brighter lights, whatever, but you had to grind to get there, right?
Absolutely. I wouldn't have been able to get there if it wasn't for being a nobody.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for agreeing to play football my senior year of high school, because I only played football my senior year just for fun.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't want to miss out on an opportunity. And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, I'm a walk-on at USF and nobody knows my name then either.
Yeah.
And I went through a really, really up and down season my first year. Could have been the end of my career right then and there, but you just put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
Just keep going.
So do you think that discipline and kind of like those struggles have helped you, I guess, like be more disciplined and kind of, I guess, like take the longer time view when it comes to like Bitcoin, right? Because everybody says like Bitcoin like expands your time horizon, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, all right, I'm saving today for, you know, 15, 20 years down the future. And Michael Saylor always says, whenever anybody buys a Bitcoin, if they've held it for at least 5 years, they've made money. But anytime I get a text message from any one of my friends down here, they're like, dude, the halving just happened. Why didn't Bitcoin shoot up? You know, it's like people are like just hearing some of these buzz things. So do you think that's kind of helped you in a sense where, you know, you're able to extend your time horizon because you know, like, hey, you know, if I just take these DCA steps over time, like, you know, it's going to help build up. And it's just kind of that ease where, you know, I guess we're still kind of in a culture where it's like, hey, like I'm going to post on Instagram, get 1,000 likes and you get that instant satisfaction. Mm-hmm. Do you think that struggle, I guess, in a sense, kind of helped you long and lengthen your time horizon over things and kind of stay more disciplined?
Most definitely. And I like the word that you use. Like, unfortunately, we do kind of live in a culture where there's instant gratification. And if you don't get the effects of your labor immediately, well, then I'm not going to do it. There's no point to it. Right. Screw this. And it's like, well, in reality, all good things take time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I did have to go through a lot of painful moments in football to then get some of the good moments of it. Same thing with investing. So, yeah, I think that those patterns apply across nature. And Coach Jeff Scott at USF had a really good saying where he said, how you do anything is how you do everything. So the same premise of, you know, grinding day in, day out on a football field apply to your relationships, to the investing. It kind of goes all hand in hand together. I think recognizing patterns is a pretty important skill to have.
I gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely agree with that, but I mean, you're obviously, you know, a better athlete than I am, but I mean, I think like kind of like where we started was pretty similar, right? I mean, it's like still that grind of getting to where you're at today and hopefully where you continue to go is it just kind of takes that discipline and going through there. And I think that's what gets lost with a lot of people, especially like during this bull run. That's what I'm going to try to stress with people the most is like, hey, you know, they're all looking for the next Bitcoin. They're all looking for, you know, I mean, I got a text the other day, like, hey, dude, is this XRP thing the next Bitcoin? I'm like, dude, get out of here. Yeah. Just don't even mess with that. Just buy it. And they're like, well, I think I missed my chance. I'm like, dude, I'm telling you, you didn't, but you're just going to have to figure that one out for yourself.
Right.
So like when you go into, you know, these NFL locker rooms, do you think you're going to get a little bit of a shit cornery out there? Like what's, I guess the initial thought with that kind of, you think
it's human nature to want fast results in anything.
Yeah.
Like it just is. You and I we're no more immune to that than anyone else. I think we've just been blessed to have the wisdom based on our previous experiences to kind of see through that in this instance, but that's just human nature in general. But I think that for me, it's like, I've tried to frame it that's an opportunity to share with someone. Like that's an opportunity to make a physical, tangible difference right then and there, instead of just being like, oh, like another person that just wants to get rich quick.
And yeah. It's
like, I've really tried hard recently to not overlook the small details just because I'm so obsessed with where I'm going. It's like, well, where I'm going doesn't matter if I'm not making a difference right now.
Yeah.
Right here and now. It doesn't matter if I go be this great NFL player and do all of this stuff, if I'm not a good person while doing it, if I'm not making a difference day to day, that just can't get lost.
Yeah. All right. So then, well, let's move on to a little bit more football questions, right? Because, I'm a Bears fan. You played at Notre Dame. So you played against my guy, Caleb Williams. Is he going to be the truth or what, dude? I know because you're a Notre Dame guy, so they're arch rivals, so I want you to say something nice about them.
What I've realized, like, it's so hard to predict how someone's going to succeed, especially at the top level, because of how mental it is. So if Caleb Williams has the mental ability to resist all the pressures that he has already faced and is going to face, no doubt he can be a sensation. He's demonstrated that he has the skill set to be elite. There's no question about that. You just don't know how the mental side is going to get to someone.
Yeah.
And that's why you also see the hidden gems of people who were walk-ons, who were undrafted, who are really nobodies, but then are able to succeed at a high level because they were just using that as an opportunity to gain these skills that eventually just thrust them into stardom. Mm-hmm. So in his situation, I want the best for him. Like, I hope that he goes and does have a great career. But I just don't know what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I know.
I had to on solid foundation.
I know. I had to ask you about that. All right. So like combine questions, right? So historically, you know, you always hear about NFL players coming out afterwards being like, this team, you don't necessarily have to put a team on blast or anything like that. But what was the most wild question that you got while going through, I guess, like the draft process or like team interviews, that kind of stuff?
That was a really cool experience. So I got to go up and be a part of the combine, but it was called a specialist showcase. So it was kind of on the tail end of the combine itself. So we didn't do any of the testing. You know, we're not in 40s. We're not doing jumps. They don't want to see the kid. Anyway. So although I think I could put up some decent times, but
yeah, man, you played soccer. Yeah. So I'm sure you'd be all right.
I hope
yeah.
I'm viewed as an athlete first and then a kicker second.
Yeah.
That's really something that's important to me. But I got to go up to the combine, and part of that is the extensive interview process where you sit down and you have all of these teams that are just grilling you with questions. And I think that for most people, it kind of starts out of these very surface level questions like, oh, well, how did you feel like you did in your career? Like, what happened on this particular kick? Like, what's your mentality when you miss? But for me, because my personality, because I'm so just philosophical natured, I like to think deeply about things. They knew my story of being an investor, being an entrepreneur, being homeschooled, having a nonprofit, all this crazy stuff. So that's what they wanted to know about. And all the questions were like, do you think that's going to be a distraction and take away from your ability to be an NFL kicker because you have all of these things that you're doing? Are you actually going to be able to focus on being a kicker? To which my rebuttal was, well, of course, because when you have a personality that you have to maximize everything, that includes the NFL too. If God's given me this opportunity, I can't just waste it because I'm focused on these other things. I have to pursue that to the fullest extent. So that's where the questions ended up going, as more of like this deeper, more philosophical questions of how are you going to manage the workload? Like, where does your true priority lie? And I really like getting into those questions. And there are some interesting ones.
Well, how do you think that was received?
I think it went both ways. I think that anyone that got to speak to me for a prolonged period of time knew I was genuine.
Yeah.
They know my character.
Yeah.
I think maybe in a 10-minute segment, they could have been like, this guy was just really prepared
to do
these interviews. He's just trying to impress us. He's just trying to share these things to get on our good side. But most of those teams, they have follow-up interviews. They'll come and do private workouts with you, and they're able to actually see the content of your character. And they also, like, they have sources that they go to.
You know,
they talk to past coaches you've had. They really do their interview. When they're going to invest hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of dollars in you, they want to know all about you.
Yeah.
So for the most part, I think that everyone knows who I am, and I hope that that's transparent to them.
Yeah.
There could be a couple people that don't. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I just always find it fascinating that, you know, they basically, I mean, you have your, obviously your book of work, right? Your whole college career that they can go back, dissect everything. But then they, you know, have like basically a week period or so where they're just doing interviews like back to back and it's stressful. They're trying to figure it out. They're pinning you against five other kickers or whatever it is. And they're trying to poke holes in basically every person, like why we want to take this guy over this guy. And, you know, teams fall in love with some guy over one guy. And, you know, they always, you know, you hear about a bunch of crazy stories, right, about like why one team ended up drafting one guy over another. And it's usually it's based on like the personality aspect of it, mm-hmm. and not about the football aspect of it. And so, like, was Bitcoin brought up in any of these
I think it questions? Was brought up as part of my investment strategy.
Okay.
So when they were asking about my job as a private trainer and then what I had done in real estate, I think I had brought it up as part of that.
Okay.
I don't think we explicitly had like a 5-minute conversation about it, but it's definitely in the works.
Yeah.
I'm a very like honest and transparent person. And so I really enjoyed those conversations. I didn't have anything to hide.
Yeah, of course not.
I'd love to pill at NFL.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting too is like BitBlock Boom, one of the biggest conferences in Austin. I think it's one of the longest running Bitcoin conferences. It was in Dallas this past year. I unfortunately wasn't able to make it, but the year before, the Houston Texans were one of the big sponsors of it. And the Houston Texans accepted, I think it was like season tickets. You could buy them with Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think there's NFL teams coming around to it, but I'm just kind of curious. I feel like, I don't know, just, you know, I mean, I'm not going to put you on the spot and name any teams or anything like that, but I think that there are some teams that are going to be more inclined to it. And then there's others that are probably going to be like, you know, stay to the new age. Right. And I think that's going to be like that in all sports, not just the NFL. Right. I mean, because I think, you know, the FTX scandal with the Miami Heat Arena, I think might get some NFL teams like scared to that point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, these are money guys, right? I mean,
yeah. And I think a lot of it is, like you said, it's more so just how can we capitalize off of like the boom that's happening?
Yeah.
So they're not really doing research into the fundamentals behind who they're endorsing. They just know that there's like all this positive buzz around something. Like, we need to get in on that.
Yeah.
Like, I think Tom Brady had a massive deal.
Yeah. With FTX. Yeah.
And like a bunch of these athletes did. And so I feel like that's where I'm most served is like, hey, you know, you guys want to be in this for the right reasons. Like, here's the fundamentals of like why this is a good thing, as opposed to just trying to get rich quick or just capitalize on the popularity of the cryptocurrency or Bitcoin, like in that moment.
Yeah, no, I mean, 100%. And I'm sure, like, you know, once they figure out you're a Bitcoin guy, you're going to get some like Shitcoin casinos reaching out to try to sponsor and whatnot. So probably. I'm sure it'll be interesting. You'll get some interesting conversation and deals coming across your table just because of, like you said, like your investment stuff. So, I mean, I'm excited for you. I think that's going to be, I mean, obviously, you know, stay level headed with all that stuff, but, you know, it's going to be an exciting time for you too. So, like with rookie mini camp and everything else coming up, is it like a direct competition, like right off the bat, or is it just kind of, I guess like you do drills and whatnot, and then they bring you in potentially for training camp. And that's when like the real quote unquote competition starts.
I think it's always a competition.
Yeah.
So no matter who you're kicking in front of, you're always showcasing your abilities, and that can potentially affect your future in the league. Now there's times where it's going to be more of a direct one-on-one competition, which might be towards the end of OTAs, like in the preseason, where they actually have to make a decision on the guy that they're going with. To start out with, they kind of just want to see you kick. They just want to see your abilities, kind of how you handle yourself mentally and physically. And I think that the thing that I've always done is I've always viewed it as self-competition, and it's really protected me because I was always able to have great relationships with my teammates, because I never really viewed that I was competing against them. I was just competing against the best version of myself every single day. And if I do that, and if I'm able to get better and better, then I don't have to worry about the results because I will be kicking for a team at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to worry about the competition because just competing against myself every single day will get me there. And I think that it allowed me to have great relationships with my teammates because I didn't look at them as like the enemy of someone I was competing against. And just in general, like building competition against yourself it came out in other areas of my life too. Like I want to be the best version of myself in all areas.
Yeah.
Even though maybe it starts with athletics or it's more prominent. And
yeah, no, I gotcha. 100%. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's, you know, the way that everybody should kind of look at it. Right. I mean, I don't know. I saw this like meme going around. It's like, if a teacher taught me anything, is to keep my eyes on my own paper. Right. You know, just don't be looking at what everybody else is doing. Right. I mean, it's just like, you know, kind of focus on what you're doing. And then, you know, whatever it is, whether it's money or like success, whatever you want to define, whatever you're looking at, don't be looking at anybody else. Right. You just kind of focus on yourself and then, you know, that good things can come from that. But you got picked up by Indy, right? So, I mean, you're close to Notre Dame right there. So how does it feel to kind of go, I guess, like in a familiar territory enough, right? You played college ball there. So how excited are you for that opportunity?
I'm so excited. I didn't know that was going to happen, because leading up to the draft, I thought there was a potential that I was going to get drafted. I had a really good combine. My pro day and my private workouts were just okay, but I did well enough to kind of put me on that bubble of a guy that's potentially going to get drafted. So I'd been speaking with teams about potential free agency, but you're hoping that you don't have a choice to get drafted in the end. But the Colts were super honest and transparent during the entire process. They expressed wanting me to get up there from the very start. I really trust that organization. They have great people in the building. I know their coordinator, Coach Brian Mason. He's who recruited me to Notre Dame.
Oh, wow. Okay. There we go.
And so having that relationship already established is awesome. Like he's the best. He's so good at what he does. So there were a lot of pieces that went into that decision and why I felt that was the right decision to make. So I couldn't be more excited about it, just from a developmental perspective of getting up there and showcasing my abilities, but then to obviously have a chance to compete for the job, because that's what you want to do at the end of the day. But no doubt it's going to be an awesome, awesome path regardless.
All right. Yeah. So then what's the biggest thing you're looking forward to then to get this whole thing started? Are you just kind of like, because we're kind of in a waiting period now. Are you just like anxious to get up there, get things going? No. Or are you just kind of, I don't know. Like
I really enjoy doing things like this.
Okay.
I think that's the coolest part for me. It's just because I am like, I do have a vision of wanting to make this world like this awesome place. I really enjoy the podcasts. I really enjoy the opportunities to get up. And I do a speaking tour for Fellowship of Christian Athletes. That's so rewarding. Like that is literally one of the coolest parts of my job. So I think it's taking advantage of that. And I really enjoy being a kicker too, because obviously I want to pursue my potential as an athlete. But it's really these opportunities that make it so special. So hoping to like meet Pat McAfee in person and like have to talk to him and like do cool things in the Indy area with FCA.
Oh yeah. I forgot.
Financial podcasts. Like that's what's.
Pat's in Indy, isn't he?
I met him through FaceTime one time.
Okay.
It was the Duke game last year at Notre Dame. It was a college game day and Kirk Herbstreit was down on the field walking around like during pregame warmups. And he's like, hey, I have someone that wants to talk to you. And he had like Pat McAfee on the phone.
Oh, that's so awesome.
I talked to him for a little bit. He's such an awesome dude. Like what he has done as an entrepreneur and as a creator is so impressive to me.
Yeah.
Because it's all based on like his personality and his energy, and really cool to see people build stuff like that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So you got some, I mean, I know he was a punter, but you got some shoes to fill as a kicker in Indy then, right? Yeah. I mean,
Well, he did both actually. So he went to West Virginia and he kicked and punted there. And
yeah. He just punted in the league. Yeah. I knew that he did both in college. And then he always told this draft story too, which always cracks me up about how, about holding. He said like he held in college when he never did.
Oh,
and
yeah.
he just lied just to try to get on a team.
It reminds me of the Theodore Roosevelt quote. That's like when someone asks you if you can do a job, you just tell them yes. And then you go figure out how to do it. That's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I can hold.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he didn't have to say how good he could hold. He just went and he figured it out in the backyard or whatever.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, I think that's going to be, very exciting times for you. And so, all right. So then what I asked you one exciting thing, and then let's see what's one thing that makes you a little bit nervous going forward. I don't know if you want to give us a little vulnerability here, Spence.
So the thing that I've always struggled with most is that when you do have this big vision of wanting to do all these things, wanting to accomplish this, the fear of failing, of not doing it, looms really large.
Mm-hmm.
So like my biggest fear is that I don't accomplish everything that I was put on this world to. And that's like the scariest thing. So it's never gotten to the point where it's paralyzing, right? Because it goes both ways.
Yeah.
It's like it is also what drives me to go and want to do these big things, is because I just can't let that win, right? I can't let the fear of not accomplishing, not reaching my fullest potential get me. I can't let that win. So it keeps me going. But at the same time, it's always there. And then when you have bad days, when you have off days, when you wake up, you don't get much sleep. Like, who knows? Like, sometimes it's more prevalent than other days. And those are the days where you really got to rely on something deeper. Like, you have to rely on a foundation to get you through those moments.
Yeah.
So there's no like one aspect of pressure that's going to be hard to face. It's not like one preseason game, like one kick in front of the Colts. It's more of just like that deeper sense of, am I going to be able to accomplish like everything that I was put on this world to do?
I gotcha. Hey, man, I think everybody's got it. Kind of got that. Everybody that's driven, I think, kind of has that fear like deep inside of them that just kind of keeps them going. I know, like, I mean, I have that every now and then too, where I just like freak out a little bit and like, oh shit, am I doing enough?
Yeah, you're like, you know, I mean, like, what am I supposed to do? Like,
that kind of aspect of things. But Spence, dude, you've been very generous with your time, so I appreciate it. Why don't you tell everybody in the Bitcoin world where they can follow along and follow your career, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Plug some social media handles, maybe whatever else you got going on
for sure. Well, I'm trying to grow the social media right now, so that's kind of like my next big step in growing my platform. But right now I'm pretty active on Instagram. It's just Spencer_Schrader. I have a Twitter account too. I'm going to try to kind of link everything so that everything's putting out the same type of content, but it's really just my Instagram right now. And then you just type my name in, follow along, you know, hopefully have a YouTube channel at some point. We'll get some other stuff going.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we got some cool videos planned. I'm sure by the time this comes out, some of those will already be out as well. So I'm excited to get those going. And Spence, thanks so much, buddy.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right.